Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
Our scripture reading this morning will be coming from the book of Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, verses 18 through 23. Ecclesiastes 2. 18 through 23. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise or a fool? Yet he will be the master of all for which I have toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This is also vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to desire all over all the toil of all my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This is also vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of his heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This is also vanity.
If you haven't already, I hope you'll open to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. We're going to spend time in several passages in that Old Testament book this morning. Before we do that, just a reminder as we think about the fact that God is able in every aspect of our life to lead us and to guide us, we want to remember this verse this month. This is 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 5. And let's say this together. Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God. What a great line, especially that last phrase, for us to repeat to ourselves every day. Our sufficiency is from God. There's an old story that has been handed down in different cultures. You may have heard it before. It functions almost like a parable. The version I heard takes place in the beach in Brazil. And a businessman has gone on vacation to one of those small villages that requires a lot of money to get there. It's not something that tourists heavily populate. And so he's able to really be in the culture. And as he is sitting there on the beach one day, he sees a Brazilian fisherman who's rowing a small boat towards the shore after catching quite a few big fish. The businessman there was very impressed, and he asked him, "How long does it take you to catch so many fish?" The fisherman said, "Well, not very long, just a short while." And the businessman looked at the time of day. There was still plenty of daylight left, and he said, "Well, why don't you stay longer out there and catch even more?" The fisherman said, "Well, this is enough to feed my family." The businessman was really puzzled by this. This is very different than the culture in which he lives and breathes in his work. And so he asked him, he said, "Well, what do you do for the rest of the day? If you're done working right now, what is it that you do?" The fisherman said, "Well, usually I wake up early in the morning, I go out to sea, I catch some fish, then I go back, play with my kids. In the afternoon, take a nap, and when evening comes, I eat with my wife and children, then we spend time with friends." The businessman was blown away, and he said, "Listen, I can really help you here. I have a PhD in business management. I can help you become a more successful person. And doesn't everyone want to be more successful? From now on, you should spend all the time possible at sea to try and catch as many fish as possible. And see, once you do that, you can make more money, and you can save that money to buy a bigger boat, which would allow you to catch more fish, and then you can start hiring people to work for you, and soon you'll be able to set up your own company. And once you get your own company, you can have a production plant for food and distribution network. By then, you can move out of this village and you could go to Sao Paulo and set up HQ and manage your other branches." And the fisherman looked at him and said, "Well, then what?" He said, "Then what? After that, you could live like a king. You could have your own house, and when the time is right, you can go public. You can float your shares in the stock exchange. You'll be rich." The fisherman says, "Well, then what?" And he says, "Well, then what? After that, you can finally retire. You can move to a house by a fishing village, catch a few fish, play with your kids, and enjoy time with your family." And he said, "Isn't that what I'm doing already? I like that parable because it forces us to ask the question, and it's just a two-word question I want us to ask today. We're going through a series that we've called God at Work, and just for a few weeks, we're going to reflect on what it means to live out our faith in a place where most of us spend a majority of our time, at some kind of work or vocation we do during the day. Whether it's on the job, whether it's working at home, whether it's all of the things that come into our lives that we have to take care of on a daily basis, how can I show God to others when I'm at work? And there's just a two-word question I want us to ask. And if we could just put this in the end of a lot of the questions our culture asks us, I think we would see some clarity. And that is that simple question, then what? We think about our goals, the goals that we have. Maybe you're a student, maybe you're just getting started, and you've got before you all of these different options and all of these things you're dreaming about. Can I encourage you to ask the question, then what? When you've achieved what you want to achieve, what's going to come next? Once you get to the end of the road that you're traveling to meet this goal, what's going to happen next? I can tell you what we're tempted to do as human beings. And that is, we're tempted once we get to that point or that goal just to keep moving it further ahead and just keep saying, well, I thought I would really have time to devote myself to my faith when I got to this point, but now I think I've got to get to this point. I thought this job was the goal, but now that I've got this job, I've got another goal. I thought that this level of income was the right level, but now I've got another goal. I thought this house was going to be fine, but now I've got something else in mind. Let me just encourage us to ask the question, then what? We know that work is a gift from God. We spent time looking through Scripture last week thinking about the fact that work was designed by God. It's part of God's creation. Work was taking place in the garden. It's not just something that we're cursed with. God has given us purpose, and He's given us ways to accomplish that purpose. So the question I have to ask myself is, what am I doing once I get where I'm going, once I accomplish that purpose? Here are a couple of things that we find in a book that is in our Old Testament that Austin just read from, the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you noticed in the passage he read, the term vanity kept coming up. Your translation may say words like meaningless. The idea is, when you look through Ecclesiastes, the teacher here, identified with Solomon, is going through and trying all of these ways to achieve happiness and to achieve fulfillment. And time after time, he finds out that life without God is meaningless. And while a passage that uses the word vanity and meaningless over and over again might sound a little discouraging or even depressing for a sermon on a Sunday morning, I think there are some incredibly encouraging things here because we see the truth about work. Now, obviously, a lot of the goals we have are very important. It's good for us to have goals for ourselves and in business, if we're in business, if you're in school, it's good to have goals. All those things are good. The question is, when we achieve those things, when we get there, what do we do next? The first principle we find out from the passage that Austin just read, and that is self-centered work does not last. If I'm only in it for myself, if I'm only looking at what I can accomplish and how I can benefit, that is not going to give me anything that lasts. Notice the two different principles that show up in this passage. Verse 18 and 19 of Ecclesiastes 2, we find out this phrase, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun. And why is that? Seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? In fact, a couple of chapters later, in Ecclesiastes 4, he describes a young man who becomes king and stands in the king's place looking at all the people. The people went on for as far as the eye could see. You've got this vision of a young man who's come to power and he has all of these citizens before him. But the description ends with this statement, those who come later will not rejoice in him. So a king might be able to soak up all the adoration that he can, but eventually, there's going to be the reminder that is only temporary. And we have this kind of goal to do something that lasts. Many times the motivation behind our work is to do something that lasts. And in many ways, people who have been able to achieve great things have given us benefits that lasted far beyond their own lifetimes. Maybe even for generations. But if we look in the context of God's plan for us, And if we look in the context of eternity, how long will anything really last? Even if I can do something that physically blesses the next generation and the next, that could be a very positive thing. But is that going to be enduring? Is that really going to last? The illusion we have of control can be incredibly powerful. He makes a very simple statement. You know, you could work for something, and then when you pass away, someone else is going to be in charge of it. And who knows if they're going to be wise with what you've left them or foolish? Who knows what's going to happen? We don't have control. We'd love to have control over everything that happens after we're gone, but we simply don't. Then in the next couple of verses, he said he gave up his heart to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. And so you get another impression that not only is there concern about who's going to control what I've worked to achieve because they might not act with wisdom, there's also the idea that, you know, someone else is going to enjoy this and they didn't even work for it. Probably all of us have been blessed and benefited from the work of other people who've gone before us. They might not have gotten to enjoy everything, and we've gotten to enjoy it. And so he's pointing to this idea that, you know, if you work so hard, at some point you have to realize, you know, someone else is really going to enjoy the fruit of this labor. If I'm only thinking physically, and that seems to be the key, if I'm only thinking physically and only thinking of myself, is this really going to last? In one of his writings, an author named Luke Ferry gave what I think is a really penetrating quote into this idea that we have of wanting to search for something powerful and, in a sense, almost create our own identity. He said, in the traditional worldview, work was considered a defect, a servile activity, literally reserved for slaves. But in the modern worldview, it becomes an arena for self-realization, a means not only of educating oneself, but also of fulfillment. Work becomes the defining activity of man. His aim is to create himself by remaking the world. Did you catch that phrase, that work becomes the defining activity of man? You see, last week, if our focus was that God created work and we don't need to be disrespectful of it, we need to honor it, we need to understand it, this week we're reminded that work is not our sole focus. It's not the sole purpose of man. And if all I'm thinking is in a self-centered way and I'm going to accomplish something and I'm really going to do something that lasts, Ecclesiastes has something else in store for me. It reminds me, you know, none of us on our own are able to accomplish anything that lasts forever. But when we work for God, we see lasting benefits. Because here's the key. Work is from God. It was designed by God. If I'm doing self-centered work, that's not going to last. But godly work will endure. If I'm working for the Lord, that's going to last much longer than anything I could ever come up with. And the impact is going to be much greater. I've shared before about the individual who helped convert my grandfather. He was a barber in Memphis that every time someone sat down in his chair, he was going to get a Bible lesson as well as a haircut. This person was a man of great faith who served in the church as a deacon, and there are a lot of people he impacted. Now, he ran a business, and he was a barber, and if you were to ask me, I wouldn't know if that business still existed. I wouldn't even know where it was located in Memphis. But I would know that my life was benefited by the fact that he saw work as an opportunity to glorify God. And by the fact that there were lives who were changed and whole families that were shaped and molded because of the training he gave those younger men that he mentored and that he converted. You see, it's interesting. We often focus on the physical aspect of work, but what's really going to last? What is it that's going to endure? Godly work will endure. That doesn't mean I don't care about what's happening physically. It doesn't mean I don't put my heart and soul into what I'm doing. It just means my perspective is different. I'm not just relying on myself. I'm not just relying on my own ability. I'm looking to God. And I'm saying, once I've accomplished my goal, then what? Then I want to work for God to glorify Him and to allow Him through me to create a difference that endures. What kind of difference can you make where you are and what you're doing? Every day, we spend a lot of time at work, If you're working at home, you spend a lot of time engaged in activities that are necessary and important and vital. What can we do to glorify God there? If I'm just thinking in a self-centered way, it's not going to last. But godly work will endure. And not only that, but Ecclesiastes reminds us that self-centered work ultimately is not going to satisfy. The whole book of Ecclesiastes seemed focused on finding meaning and finding something that really satisfies and fulfills. When we get to Ecclesiastes 4, just a couple of chapters later, verse 7 and 8, we read, "Again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, 'From whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?' This also is vanity and an unhappy business." He paints this picture of an individual who's all by himself, doesn't seem to have family or friends that he's concerned with, and he keeps working, and his eyes are never satisfied. You know, if I approach work with a self-centered attitude, I'm probably not going to have as many people who are close to me. Because if all I'm concerned with is myself, and I'm trying to find meaning in what I can get out of life and what I can get out of work, I'm going to turn around and I might be isolated. I might turn around and realize that because my only focus has been myself, I don't have anyone else around me. And this picture is a tragic one precisely because you have someone with never-ending toil because his eyes are never satisfied and there's no one else around him. Caring for only ourselves can naturally lead to a lack of relationships. And even the money we earn in selfish work is never going to fully satisfy. Just look at a couple of other passages in Ecclesiastes. 5 verse 12, "Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep." Here you've got a contrast of someone who's going out and working, probably working in the fields, doing a labor that's exhausting, but at the end of the day, he's able to sleep well, whether he's making a lot or whether he's not making very much. But he says the full stomach of the one who has a great deal doesn't let him sleep. There's not a satisfaction there. Or Ecclesiastes 6 and verse 7, "All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied." If I'm looking for fulfillment in something physical, I'm not going to find it. And these aren't the only passages in Ecclesiastes that tell us this. This is something that shows up over and over again. Whether he's looking at work or whether he's looking at riches or pleasure or whatever it is, he says ultimately those things don't fill that void we have. They don't satisfy that need that we feel. And so what do we do? How do we decide we can be used by God? Because self-centered work doesn't satisfy, but godly work fulfills. And there's a contrast between those two. If I'm only thinking of myself, that's going to put me at odds with God's will. Think about what happened right after Noah and his family were delivered from the flood. They built the ark. God gave them a command more than once that they were to fill the earth and to multiply it. The idea being you have almost a new creation. Noah and his family have been preserved, and now it's time to settle throughout the earth and to fill it and multiply it. But just a couple of chapters later, we find out that people have all settled in a place called Shinar in Genesis 11. And they decided to build a tower. They haven't filled out and they haven't spread out over the earth. They've all congregated together and they want to build a tower. And they've got a way to make bricks that they can do that even quicker. And they built something that probably would have resembled one of the ziggurats that they've discovered in the ancient world. One of those kinds of towers that they were building up. And the purpose in verse 4 is revealed. They say, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." The purpose of building the tower in the city was to make a name for ourselves. And they said, lest we be scattered over the whole earth. What had God commanded Noah and his family to do? To fill the earth. To be scattered over all the earth. But what happened when they wanted to make a name for themselves is it naturally put them at odds with what God's will was. God's will was that they would fill the earth. They wanted to make a name for themselves. And so God takes action and confuses their language, and they do fill the earth. Just as God had said, it just wasn't something they did willingly. God had to step in. When I'm thinking only of myself, that's going to put me at odds with God's work. And so if I center my work on God, that gives me a chance to glorify Him. If you were to ask yourself a question, you needed to picture the servant of the Lord, someone who is a true servant of God, who would come to mind? If you had to think of someone who's a servant of God, who would come to mind? Maybe the first people we'd think of would be missionaries. We might think of individuals that have gone to serve God in far-off places and made great sacrifices, and those are certainly servants of God. We might think about people who are in full-time ministry work and sort of thinking about that as their vocation, their life vocation, and those are definitely individuals who serve God. But you know, if we look through Scripture, we find a lot of people who serve God, and a lot of them did so from positions we would think of as very powerful. For example, Joseph became second in command to Pharaoh in Egypt, and he was able to use his position and his influence to save who knows how many lives during a famine. And not only that, to be reunited with his family, and it was through his family that we would see the Israelites and then eventually the Son of God come into the world. Esther was the queen of Persia, another individual that lived in the palace, that was in there with a great amount of power, and yet she was willing, because of her position, to allow the Jewish people to be prepared when an attack came. And instead of a massacre there, she was able to save the lives of her people. Or we think of Nehemiah, someone who had a pretty high rank as the cupbearer to the king, and yet when he finds out that they're having serious issues with the rebuilding of Jerusalem, he's able to use his power and his influence not only to go back himself, but also to bring with him resources to rebuild that wall. These were servants of God that had high-ranking positions in fields other than a full-time mission work, and yet because they were focused on serving God, they accomplished incredible things for the Lord. What could we accomplish if our focus was always on godly work? It's possible to have that key position and to have wealth and power and to use it to glorify God. And that's important because the kind of work that's rewarded today is egocentric. It's self-centered work. It's amazing to me how seriously we take different addiction issues, and we should. When we think about being addicted to drugs or addicted to alcohol, those are very serious issues. We need to take those things very seriously. We have groups that have arisen to be able to support those dealing with it. We have different resources out there. But you know, there is a socially acceptable form of addiction, and that is being addicted to working. We might think about being workaholics or workaholism, that you do that all the time. But you know, we don't have really a negative stigma about that. In our culture, that's rewarded. Now, I'm not talking about hard work. We know that God wants us to work hard. We've talked about that. I'm not even talking about the work it takes to make ends meet. I know all of us have times in our lives where we've got to sacrifice just to make sure we can provide for people we care about. When I think about addiction to work, I'm thinking about work for the sake of itself, making that the chief end of our lives, where we're never satisfied with what we have. We just want to keep going and keep filling our time and keep working harder and harder and harder because we want to get more and more to gratify ourselves. That's very different than having a good work ethic and working hard to provide. That's trying to use work to gratify a desire in our lives that Ecclesiastes tells us will never be truly fulfilled by anything physical. I don't know if your experience was like mine when you first learned to drive a car. But do you remember that feeling when you're out on the road and you realize, I'm behind the wheel, I am in control of where this car goes? Maybe you had conversations with your parents that were like conversations I had, which was, this car isn't going to decide where it goes on its own. It's relying on you. It'll go anywhere you take it to. If you steer it off into a ditch, that's where you're going to end up. So you've got to be careful when you're behind the wheel. No one else is going to control that car for you. You have to take that seriously before you can really appreciate the responsibility of driving. When we read through the Old Testament book of Psalms, in Psalm 127 and verse 1, there's a statement in which the psalmist writes, Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. In a couple of those lines, we're reminded that ultimately the Lord needs to be the one who's guiding our lives and who's guarding our lives. It's a reminder that no one in the culture is going to help me set my own boundaries. No one in the culture is going to help me steer my life. No one in the culture is going to be able to say, well, you know, you really ought to consider this, you really ought to do this. It's my responsibility to look to God, to let Him guard my house, to let Him build my life, to let Him help me set boundaries, to make sure I'm not making anything an idol, even work, that doesn't become an idol in my life that I serve rather than serving God. Self-centered work is ultimately not going to satisfy, but godly work will fulfill. And I think all of us have known individuals in our lives who have probably achieved great things in careers and have worked very hard and have managed to achieve levels of success. And those who do that and are satisfied, I've noticed, seem to be the ones who were eager to give and eager to help and eager to be thinking about others rather than themselves. The solution isn't to avoid work or to say work is bad. The solution is to make sure God is building my life and guarding my life and setting the kind of boundaries that will allow me to glorify Him with my work and not focus only on me. More than once in Ecclesiastes, we see this connection that there's nothing better than to enjoy the life God's given you, to enjoy the sustenance God gives, to enjoy work, but that's always connected with serving God. I can only truly enjoy life if I'm serving the Lord. That's where true enjoyment is found. And so here's a challenge I want to give us today. And I hope you'll take a piece of paper. Maybe you can write in the margin of the Informer. But I'd like for you sometime this week, maybe even today, to write out a job description. This isn't a job description of a job you want, but where you are right now in life. What is your job description? If you had to describe what you do during the week, what exactly would you say? For some, you might say, well, I'm a student. So everything I do is working to get a degree in my field. Once you sort of write that out, I'm a student and I'm taking these classes and I'm doing this, let me just encourage you to ask that two-word question. Then what? I get a degree in my field. Then what? Well, I can get a job that I want. Okay, that's great. Then what? Well, then I'll be able to move where I want to move and work in the area I want to work. That's wonderful. But keep asking that question. And then at some point you can say, well, once I get to that point, I can use my God-given talents to glorify Him and give all the credit to Him from those that I know. Maybe you could say, well, I run my own business. I'm working each day to grow my company, to spread my reputation as someone who's trustworthy in the community. Then what? Well, then, if that continues to grow and if my business grows, not only will I have more resources that I can use to glorify God, but I can be an example of godly living to everyone who deals with us. Maybe your job description will say, well, I'm retired. I'm serving, not in the way I once did, but I'm trying to find ways to serve others. You can still answer that question. Then what? Well, then I can use my time to find ways to encourage, to write cards, to make calls, pray for others, to make visits, and not only encourage them, but help them see God's love. No matter what phase we are in life, and no matter what we do during the day, we can all benefit from asking that question. Well, then what? I've gotten to this point in my life. God has seen me through here. What am I doing to glorify Him? Because ultimately, the only fulfillment that will ever truly satisfy will be from serving God. So once I get where I'm going, once I accomplish what I want to accomplish, then what? Hopefully for us, the answer will be similar to the one that we find at the end of Ecclesiastes. The chief goal of serving God. And no matter what we do or where we are, that can be our desire. It may be that you need to begin serving God this morning. It may be that you're searching for fulfillment and searching for meaning. Let me encourage you, the place to find it is in the God who created us. Nothing else is going to fill that void in our lives. If you need to become a child of God and to put Christ on in baptism, you can do that this morning and begin living that life that can trust in Him. It may be that you need to come back to God and other things have taken His place in your life and you want to make that right. If there's any way we can encourage you or help you, please come as we stand and as we worship together.
Almost persuaded.